The Riverina's 11:52 Triple M. It's Lee with you this morning. I'm lucky enough to be catching up with the creator of the Podcast One series, Changemakers, Amanda Tattersall. G'day, Amanda. How are you going?
Lovely to talk with you, Lee.
And likewise, I've been really looking forward to chatting with you since the opportunity became available, because you have had the chance to chat with so many amazing people. Firstly, talk to us a little bit about Changemakers.
Sure. So my background is in social change. I co-founded GetUp, which is a big digital campaigning organisation, and some stuff like that. And while I found all that social change good, I guess I felt like there's been something missing, that there must be more to how we can make change in the world that includes lots of people, that provides people with the resources and skills, that isn't something that just happens down in Sydney but happens all over the place. And so I maybe had a slightly crazy idea that what I would do is I would set up a podcast and I would go around the world and I'd meet as many amazing change makers as I could find doing extraordinary things, and I'd interview them and I'd find out all about their stories and all about the secret lessons that they'd found in the battles that they'd engaged in. And I would tell those stories to everyone, so we'd have a little bit of inspiration, you know, a little bit of hope that change is possible, but also a sense of what it takes to make powerful change.
And series two of your podcast is now out. As I said, I'm fascinated by the people you've caught up with. So you've talked to everyone from activists in Cape Town and Hong Kong to TV show producers. Now, Brooklyn Nine-Nine, one of the best comedies on TV, but I would have thought unusual fodder for Changemakers. How did you come to Brooklyn Nine-Nine as one of your topics?
So, you know, I have to confess, I'm a Brooklyn Nine-Nine addict. I just really love that TV show. Yeah. And my husband and I were watching, you know, it as our favourite TV show one night. And all of a sudden, instead of just doing sort of light and breezy comedy about relationships and, you know, and fodder, they were doing a show about police racism. So it's a comedy show that's set in a police precinct in Brooklyn, and they were taking on the fact that a heap of police in America shoot black people. And I couldn't believe it, you know, like I couldn't believe that they were taking such a taking on such an important issue, right? It was a bit of a shock to me too. So I sort of went, well, we've got to get in. We've got to find out the answer to this. I've got to go speak to the people who've made my favorite TV show and work out why. So our producer went on a social media hunt, and because she's a genius, she was able to contact one of the co-creators, and we found out very soon that they thought that this was something that they were incredibly proud of, that this was one of the best episodes they'd ever created, and they were dead keen to talk about it. So we talked to Dan Gore, one of the co-creators. We talked to Phil Jackson, who wrote the episode called Moo Moo. And then we talked to Terry Crews, who was the star of that show.
Yeah, just an incredible lineup. And as you say, it's an incredible comedy, but it like there's so many great little messages through there as well.
I think so. Like what we try and pull out is, rather than just reporting on how brilliant they are, which they are, we sort of try and draw out of them, like, what do they do to make it work, right? Like, there's something really powerful about being able to talk about a difficult issue to an enormously large audience and have the large audience be engaged rather than go, oh, my God, this is just such boring, preachy stuff. Like, how do they do that? That was the thing that we wanted to get to the heart of.
Look, closer to home, I watched with interest the marriage equality debate, and like I was so pleased when the marriage equality law passed. You went inside marriage equality, and being with GetUp, you would have had a fairly unique perspective on this. What did you learn while you spoke with the team who were behind the push for marriage equality?
Yeah, there were a couple of important lessons in that one. I mean, the first one is just don't give up, you know. Like many of the people who launched and led the marriage equality debate started in 2004, right, when John Howard passed a piece of legislation to exclude LGBTI people from the right to marriage. And the legislation didn't pass till 2017. And so that's a long time to patiently work on something you believe in. So, you know, no matter what your issue, I guess one of the messages from marriage equality is, like, don't give up. You know, big things can happen, but change is often slow. The other thing that I think was really important about that campaign is that they had a big battle on their hands, because it wasn't just that they needed to campaign for a long time. Marriage equality was really unpopular when it started. You know, all the politicians were against them, Labor and Liberal, and also only 38% of the population was in support of, you know, same-sex marriage. And they had to radically shift public opinion. And probably the most important thing they did to do that was to connect their issue to clear, important Australian values. So for many people in the gay and lesbian community, but also for others, the issue wasn't really about marriage. Like, even though it was about marriage, it was about being able to do what you wanted to do. There were heaps of people in 2004 who didn't want to get married. But the issue became, they said, no, the issue is about equality. The issue is about the right to get married, and and whether certain people in society should have a right that other people shouldn't have. And by connecting it to that age-old value around equality, I think that they were able to both carry support inside the LGBTI community, but then they were also then able to communicate why this was important to anyone else. You know, like mums became, you know, one in some of the interviews, like, I was brought to tears. You know, I've got two children. I don't know what their sexual identity is going to be. And when the kids were talking about how mums were a really important part of this campaign because they just wanted to ensure that their children could have the right to get married to the person that they loved if they grew up and they were gay, I was like, I understand that, you know. And I think that was able to connect to a lot of people and was really critical in being able to build popular support.
Big social and scientific issue at the moment is climate change. Look, you've seen so many powerful movements throughout the world. This one seems like it's gaining traction, but again, change in action seems to be really slow. Having spoken to the people who you've spoken to, in your opinion, what do you think is going to take to shift the mind of politicians to take further action on climate change rather than just draft policies and agreements which don't seem to be overly enforceable?
Yeah. So I think that there's a lot of stuff happening actually under Trump that inspires me for what can happen in Australia around the issue of climate change. Because what's happened there and what is growing in Australia is a sort of decentralised movement across the country underneath every single political representative. So in America, I did a story about this group called Indivisible that has set up 6,000 groups across America. Every single electoral body in America has an Indivisible group. It's extraordinary. And they were set up within about 6 weeks after the inauguration. Unbelievable. But this idea that you have people, even a small number of people, coming together under representatives and being relentless in the pursuit of a better world, right? And I think that that's what is going to be needed in Australia on climate change, because when it comes to the tough edge of climate change, which, let's name it, is coal, both Labor and Liberal parties and National parties are really reluctant to engage in the conversation, right? There's this big mine up in the Galilee Basin that's being the Adani Group wants to build, that we know if it ran for 60 years would definitely, it would have to do, because that's how long it takes to get all that coal out of the ground. It would massively contribute to global climate change, and it would transform Australia in the process. And we know that has to be stopped. Yet most of the politicians are just playing blind, you know, sort of shutting their eyes to the idea that that's the key issue in the debate, you know. And it's cool that people talk a little bit about renewables and funding renewables, but really, at the same time as doing that, we have to stop coal. And that's the tough political issue. And I think that that's going to require decentralized activity in electorates across the country for a sustained period of time. And then you never know when that creates a tipping point. So in America, in the Indivisible campaign, it was that movement that saved healthcare. You know, like the Republicans had control of both the Senate and the House of Representatives, you know, like a sort of ultimate control. But through a people-based movement in support of the ability to live, you know, which is what healthcare is, they were able to save healthcare against all the odds. We sort of need that kind of movement here, because at the moment, the Liberal Party doesn't seem to be able to keep a leader who cares about climate change. Like, as soon as, and the Labor Party doesn't do very well on that either. So the people need to be able to sort of demand the politicians that we need on this issue. And that requires quite decentralized democratic action. And I think that there are models for that, but I think that's what it's going to take for substantial change.
And what's the big next big social change that you see for Australia?
You know, to be honest, it's the climate change piece that I'm actually really personally invested in. Like, you know, it feels like a cliche in some ways, but you know, I've got two kids who are 10 and 8, and I really think about the world that I'm going to give them versus the world that I got, and I worry that actually their lives are going to be a ton harder because we didn't take care of our resources and live within our means in terms of how we use environmental resources and how we burn things to make our economy work. And that makes me pretty motivated to want to do something about it. And the thing is that I guess for me, it's really urgent. Like, you know, if something isn't done in the next 10 years, we're really in a tough space.
Yeah.
And also, it's not on its own. Like, if we work on climate change, it can shift issues around how just or unjust the economy is. You know, we can talk about other issues as they connect to climate change. Climate change, in some ways, for me, isn't a single issue, but a way of reorganising the world to perhaps be a little bit fairer at the same time.
Fantastic. Now, one final question before I let you go. You've spoken with some amazing people over Series 1 and 2. Are there plans for Series 3, and who would you like to talk with most?
Yes, there is a plan for Series 3 that's going to come out in May next year. And my favourite excitement is that I'm hopefully going to talk to the young students who led the campaign in response to the shooting at their school in Florida, the Douglas Stoneman students. I've got a connection with them, and I'm planning on heading over there early next year to meet with them around the year anniversary and talk with them about how they launched their campaign and how they're pushing against gun violence as people who are not just distantly connected to it, but as people who experience it.
Yeah. Well, Amanda, it's been amazing chatting. And of course, your Podcast One series, Changemakers, is now available. Make sure you jump on Podcast One and check it out and hear about some of these incredible people doing amazing things right around the world. Amanda Tattersall, thank you so much for catching up this morning.
Thank you so much, Stu.